The views expressed on this Turnbuckle Tabloid live stream or Turnbuckle Tabloid podcast episode do not reflect the views, thoughts, or opinions of the RageWorks brand, including the RageWorks podcast network, RageWorks content partners, advertisers, and affiliates. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
This is Little Bit, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid. Fuck Jay Santy.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1... 0 all engine running. Let's go. Yo,
brat, Notorious 1-7 is here, LEX, OGs, 5150, the Latin Frank White, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Give me a fucking mic!
Turnbuckle Tabloid, cutting a promo.
Well, it's that time of year, ladies and gentlemen, and I am happy to say that, yes, Thanksgiving is here. We are all ready to get filled with not only just fun, food, and family, we're also going to be filled with the goodness that is wrestling. Yes, this is the tradition, the time-honored tradition here at Turnbuckle Tabloid to indulge in not only just the wrestling aspect, but the bullshit that's gone with it as well. Jeez. I'm here with Whole Milk Mike, and we're sandwiched in between two pay-per-views this week. We're got the review of Full Gear, and we have predictions for Survivor Series. It's that time-honored tradition, ladies and gentlemen, to see who gets filled first, your wrestling side or your gluttonous fat side. So, What are you expecting for Thanksgiving, my guy, Whole Milk?
Not really this year, honestly. Me personally, it's been a very down year, losing a family member. So this is going to be the first time sitting around without said family member. So I bet a lot of people listening to this could relate. So, I don't know. The way you just put all of that, very poetic, I would say. But yeah, we have two shows, a tale of two different shows where we prefer certain styles or different type of flavors, like certain food everybody has around Thanksgiving. So I don't know, to kind of tie into that.
What do you mean?
I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
What do you mean? The murderous turkey and dressings that you'll have when we're discussing AEW or the...
Yes, some people, like myself, just prefer turkey, mashed potatoes, and stuffing, while others just rather just drown the turkey in gravy
and spit it out and hope somebody else drinks it from your mouth to theirs, and then
pull stapler out and just staple your titty.
Why not?
Yeah.
And then
because grandpa had a little too much to drink,
and then we get the confusing and multi-leveled desserts or entrees that WWE Survivor Series is going to be giving you, like, okay.
Someone that we haven't seen in over a year crowd favorite, bona fide Hall of Famer.
That uncle that likes to come in smoking weed and giving everybody money. Yeah. That's we're waiting for. Or a surprise, maybe, that a longtime member, family member we haven't seen in quite some time, who we heard was going to other people's houses and causing trouble until they finally say, you can't be here anymore. Get the fuck out. So
the one family member that doesn't know when to shut up.
At least we know he's not going to be drinking. We know that he's straight edge. If there's a possibility of he'll pop up. But alluding to that.
This sounds so stupid.
It does. It does. But let's get into Full Gear. So going into the Full Gear, it was just a menagerie of confusion, thrown together.
Matches. Did you have high hopes? Did you have high hopes for said show?
No. The only thing I know when it comes to the idea of AEW's pay-per-views is just that you know that they're going to take everything, put everything all in one, and know that the crowd is going to love it because it's just going to be a car wreck. It's like Destruction Derby or NASCAR. You know, it's just going to be high octane, fast pace, and it's going to be a lot of fucking crashes.
I will say, as far as like me doing social media for Turnbuckle Tabloid, it's always a stressful time for the AEW pay per views when I have to try and grab all the AEW match graphics and I don't get them to like the day of, because guess what? They add more matches the day of or the day before.
Yeah.
And everything is updated or changed. And then I have to, as you see on the Instagram like, post, I always like put up polls for each match to get people's thoughts and opinions. And I try to do like weeks in advance, but that never works. So now with AEW, I just wait till the day of and wait for social media to help me with that one. So.
Thanks, yeah, AEW. And also,
yeah, I mean, also too, like 11 matches for AEW, 3 on the pre-show.
Is that really necessary though?
Like how many matches do we? I guess is the norm for AEW.
Yeah, but
I mean, like, I'm trying to think of like the one double or nothing where we went to your place to watch it, and I think there's like 16 matches in total.
Yeah, it just seems as though that there's just way, it's because they have so much wrestlers on their roster that they tried so hard to just put everybody on the show, give them a payday, give them a spot. It reminds me of when you're playing SmackDown versus Raw, the GM mode back in the days, and you got to get the highest rating for your shows. So you're putting on like 6 triple threats and 4 ladder matches.
I know that feeling. If you use Hall of Famers in your season mode, they'll give you the highest match ratings.
Right. It's just like you're doing too much, guys. Sometimes less is more.
The struggle was real.
Yeah. Sometimes less is more.
Yeah. Well, I mean. Full Gear had 11. We're talking about Survivor Series, and meanwhile, I think they have five to six matches.
Yeah, I think WWE has come to the realization,
especially with Triple H taking charge. That's been the norm now.
Yeah, that and knowing that the War Games matches, both of them are just going to be long anyway, so you might as well just give what you got. But let's get into it. Going into Full Gear, what we got?
So. I guess we'll start on the pre-show. So we had Claudio Castagnoli beat Buddy Matthews. Solid match. I'll say two great workers. Nothing really to say here. Then we had Eddie Kingston defeat Jay Lethal to retain the Ring of Honor world title. And then we got to the main event of the pre-show. It was MJF and Samoa Joe versus the Guns for the Ring of Honor world tag team titles.
Are we doing too much with MJF these days?
In what sense of him working?
Well, this is the second pay-per-view that we have him working 2 matches. And I think it's fairly clear that they're stretching him out because they know they're not able to get what they need to get audience-wise when he's not on. So they do everything possible to make sure that he's on. I get it, story-wise. I'm still confused with the whole Joe helping him tag in this match. And
I can explain that for you.
Oh, no, no.
So
no. I get it, but it's still like, it's still ridiculous for me.
But for like whose character, like Joe's character or MJF's character?
For Joe's character. I mean,
for Joe, it's like, I'll scratch your back, but motherfucker, you're going to give me a shot at your title.
Yeah, but you know, he's already got so many targets on him. Like, it's just, I get it. The champion has always got to be on the lookout because somebody's always going to snipe. But it's like, it's sometimes it's just overkill. This is almost like, I need Ritalin to follow all this shit.
And then I'll say this, in the case of Samoa Joe, where he relinquished a title that he was holding on to forever, and now he has a goal for something bigger, which I appreciate the fact that they didn't make him lose on TV to make him go for the biggest belt, because to say if he would have lost to Keith Lee, and then the next day or that same day goes, yeah, I'm the number one contender for the world title. We sit there thinking, wait, you just lost. What makes you? The logic doesn't match. But my little theory for MJF 2 is that let him work all this stuff now, because by the new year, when whatever the angle is going to be at World's End with him and the Devil, he's going to take significant time off. Like with the new year, I think like by Revolution he'll be back. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are...
Because whatever the angle is, they're going to take him out and brutalize him. And he's not going to be on TV wrestling for like 2 months.
And I know that there's many who are saying that that it's going to be a big, you know, chase bidding war for him. He's not going anywhere. He's staying in AEW. He's not leaving. I'm not falling for the whole belief that he's gonna leave. He's comfortable where he's at as AEW. And in fact,
after all this time, you would hope he signed a new deal.
I believe honestly that I think he's afraid of leaving. I honestly believe that he might be afraid of having to change up what he's accustomed to, not being able to have the, I guess, freedom to,
I can see that,
talk the way that he can talk, or because ring wise,
if he goes straight to WWE TV, he's not gonna have the promos he wants. They're gonna be scripted to the point, and he's not gonna be able to say the words. Well, I think with MJF, me personally, is he does a lot of cursing, so a lot of that will be cut out if he goes to WWE. So.
And he won't be able to, and he won't be able to have the cush schedule, because he's going to be asked to work every week, and he hasn't been able to get, you know, he's been able to relax and not get in the ring every week. So I think that it this is a cush gig for him. And if he hasn't gotten a contract already, Tony's going to throw him a boatload of fucking money not to go anywhere.
Yeah, and especially since he has a part in the Von Erichs movie, that they're definitely going to want him on TV to promote it, because I think he has an executive producer credit on the movie.
Right. So,
yeah, they retain, and then the big angle was that the guns pulmonized his ankle. So that led to the return of Adam Cole on crutches.
We're just going to say that he's the Devil, right?
No, it's a tease. I'm thinking it's somebody that hasn't been on TV.
That hasn't been on TV?
He hasn't been on TV because he got suspended. I mean, I'll say this, the glass thing a couple weeks ago was kind of a tease for that.
So you think the Devil is Jungle Boy?
I think, yeah, the Devil's Jack Perry.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's going to be like Jack Perry... And like Wardlow, like, because all the people, apparently the people that are under the mask are going to be who they're going to be when they're revealed. So if one of them is Wardlow, and the guy that threw Bowens through the glass was had a Wardlow like shape, right, that's going to be Wardlow. So
So it's everybody who MJF has crossed.
Pretty much. But the main one's gonna be Jack Perry, because you go back to all those months ago where MJF said, like, I do see something in you, so maybe MJF did see the devil in Jack Perry. And I mean, not for nothing, Jay. You've been calling it for a fucking year. Just that he's not a devil like as a character, he's just a devil outside the ring.
Nah, he's not a devil, he's an asshole. That's the difference. Yeah. There's a fucking difference.
We'll try to play on words here, sir. But they had Adam Cole come out. So then the whole angle, mind you, this is the pre-show. Will MJF compete in the main event? And I'm supposed to buy this show with like 30 seconds left to go. And I don't have a main event set. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, right.
So you have the match lineup like what they started with? Because I know what they did on the pre-show.
Right. No, I don't have that in front of me. Let me see.
Let me pull it up as well. Professionals, everybody.
Yeah, I know. There's a. We're live, people. We're live.
Yeah. But I will say, like, them bringing Adam Cole out with him on crutches, I do believe he's hurt. I don't think this is a storyline. I don't think he's faking it. So the fact that they brought him out there just so to build more storyline tension, I see what they were trying to do.
I don't think he's as injured as it comes off. I think he is injured, but I don't think he's as injured as it is played up.
Oh, I know. Oh, so as we look it up, I know what they opened the show with the trios match. Christian, Luchasaurus, right, and Nick right, Wayne yeah, against yeah. Sting, Darby, and Adam Cole. But with, I'll say this, this show had a bunch of entrances. Christian Cage's entrance with the kids singing or like humming his song.
Right. Was epic. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Was epic. Was
it's
epic.
Like, it was so simple. Like just have little kids humming his song. It'd be like on the Titantron, it's like patriarch, like father figure, all this shit's like popping up on the Titantron as he's making his entrance.
Yeah, this Christian is the best Christian we've ever seen. I'm happy to say that. I'm happy that he's able to be utilized this way with the promotion. One of the thumbs up, the bonus of AEW is having Christian be this cad, this individual. I love every minute of it.
I continue to love the sleeveless turtleneck shirt he constantly wears during his matches. So going into this, they really didn't. They teased a lot of Christian and Edge not touching until the final spot. But Jay, I know you're ready to go off on this, but we have Darby Allin, who has a separated shoulder, who this is his last match for a while. And now he's going to go train to climb Mount Everest. But this fucker took a choke slam from Luchasaurus to the apron of the ring and bounced off it.
This, once again, this is just... This
from inside the ring to the outside.
Yeah, and this is... And multiple levels, I'm perturbed with Darby Allin. Number one, this kid, he takes these risks. You know, there's a lot of shit that is to be said about the promotion, but you also get him who's doing the same shit.
Yeah, we have to look at Darby because he's the one telling them, I'm good. Meanwhile, he's not good. He went to this match like not even 50% healthy.
Right. And then we get, who the fuck is able to say, I'm going to take time off to go climb a fucking mountain? Like, I wish I could tell my job that shit. Yeah, I'm going to take time off. I'm going to go climb a fucking mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly.
Meanwhile, his shoulder is separated.
Right.
Or sprains, whatever the fuck. Meanwhile, people die on Mount Everest, and this guy is... I don't know. Okay. I'm not wishing harm. I'm not saying this guy, I want him to die. I'm just saying This guy needs to kind of slow the fuck down.
Yeah. If it's bad enough that Darby just sits there to say, hey, let me take a bump from the top rope onto a coffin and might as well just say, hey, let me just take a bump and climb a fucking mountain. Let's just do that, right? Let's take a bump off the top of a fucking mountain.
Yeah. Meanwhile, weeks ago he did like that Nitro Circus thing, and I think he spilled. But whatever, this guy is reckless. So
yeah, but once again, he's a liability, and I get it that you know the independent contractors, but you still have an obligation to deal with what you have to do for the fucking company you work for. Come on, Darby, but get it together, bro. And he's always said, I don't believe he's gonna wrestle for a long time anyway. So.
I mean, the amount of bumps he takes, there's going to be one day he hurts himself badly and his career is going to be over. It's going to be sad as fuck.
Yeah.
But spot of the match, Ric Flair and Christian Cage confronted each other, and then Christian Cage gave him the unholiest of low blows.
Oh.
I mean, also people pointed out too that this is a receipt from during the pandemic when Ric Flair well blowed him, so Christian got his receipt back. Well, guys, revenge, Jones, I would say.
Oh, right. I forgot about Rick getting involved in this match because, you know, he just can't stay out of it, ladies and gentlemen.
He did his Flair chops, and then he was about to celebrate, and then Christian just fucking well blowed the hell out of him. But Copeland, Allen, and Sting win, so...
I'm just happy that the one bright spot on this match was the fact that they once again, like, you know, like you mentioned, the Christian Edge not touching thing was a good work.
Yeah, I mean, they have until, I mean, if they hold off until World's End, they're probably gonna do it at World's End or Revolution, either or. I'm looking forward to the match, so. And them two know how to work, so it'll probably be the best match on the show.
Yeah, you know, it has to be this stipulation or something, retirement or some shit. Who the fuck knows?
Mm. We'll see. Next up, we had International Championship Orange Cassidy versus John Moxley.
Oh,
so.
It
hit you back to back.
Jeez. It's like, I hate prefacing this all the time. I love Mox, but I'm just tired. I'm tired of it. Then after hearing his nonsense about his thoughts about concussion protocols, I'm like, dude, you're the reason for this shit. Like, and then immediately, surprise, surprise, he bleeds. There we go. Thanks, Mox.
Mm-hmm. And this match had no stipulation. This was a straight wrestling match.
And, of course, the owner's favorite wrestler, Orange Cassidy, retains.
I was actually shocked. I thought they were going to give the belt back to Moxley, but look at the grand scape of things, like the scene of everything. Moxley does not need this championship, so it was a good thing Orange retained. But Orange should lose this title to say that Konosuke Takeshita and have Takeshita run around with this title, so we'll have to wait and see. I mean, everybody has high hopes for Takeshita, but it just seems like that's the one guy that gets the shaft a lot. Like he doesn't get any of the championship opportunities. He's just like standing next to Don Callis and just look menacing.
It's gonna happen soon.
Hopefully by World's End. So, next up we had Hikaru Shida versus Timeless Toni Storm for the women's title. I mean, was the outcome of this match any surprise?
No. By the way, if I didn't mention it before, I love the Luther character. They gave him something to do.
I mean, it's not a bad idea.
As for
world famous deathmatch wrestler turns into a butler.
Yeah, I world famous. I've never fucking heard of. Well, you know what? You're right. I'm not into deathmatches, so what the fuck would I care? But for him to do this gimmick, I'm glad that they gave him a job. And
thank you, Chris Jericho.
Tony Storm getting the
She got the belt back.
Makes sense. She has been transitional, and as much as people, you know, like her and such, I'm okay with her dropping it. It's fine. Like she's not to say she's boring.
She's solid. She could wrestle.
Yeah, but there's just something that's not there. She needs something. There's something that needs to be done with her. She needs something different. I don't know what it is, though. Like I can't put my finger on it. But other than that,
maybe a character, maybe a reason why they cheer for her.
Yeah. Not that
with Toni Storm, she's the most entertaining woman on the roster, and it's probably the most ridiculous thing she's probably doing right now.
Yeah, and it was
everything she does is in black and white. There's a portion of the match where she's about to do the running hip attack, and the screen goes black and white until she does the move. Yeah. It also shows that production is like very well. It's also simple too, just to change the color of the screen, but. But still, like, not a lot of people are doing that on TV at this moment.
Yeah, maybe if they would pay more attention to doing stuff like that with their storytelling as opposed to their production, they'll actually have more of a draw to the fucking to the company.
And as you say, storytelling. After the match, they had Mariah May come out with a bouquet of flowers and gave them to Toni Storm by congratulating her.
Right.
And I don't know if you saw the clip, but from the media scrum, Tony had written a letter to Tony Khan saying, like, excuse me, I'm not going to be in your media scrum, but make sure you say hi to Ted Turner for me. It was a funny bit, and he was laughing throughout the whole thing. But it was amusing how, like, at least they gave a reason why she was at the media scrum. So, again, she's playing into this character.
Yeah, you know, she even said, I'm not going to stick to the script, and like, which is a tongue-in-cheek way of saying something about, I guess, the match. But she ended up getting a win, and well-deserved. This was a good title change.
Next up, we had Ricky Starks and Big Bell retain the AEW World Tag Team titles in a four-way ladder match against FTR, LFI, and the Kings of the Black Throne.
The King of the Black Throne, House of Black. Why are these teams getting separate names from their what the fuck? Like, it's confusing enough with all the fucking factions that they have, but now the faction within a faction has a name.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I just have a thing of, well, we have Ricky Starks and Big Bill. Who let's be real here, they're not a real tag team. It's just two guys put together to try and elevate these belts. Let's be real here. Because the tag division that was built from day one is not the same as day one. I mean, you had the Lucha Bros, you have Young Bucks, you have all these great teams at the start of the company, at the beginning of this company. And now, like, FTR is still great. You have LFI, you have Rush and Jalisco, who are now a random team. Meanwhile, Andrade is not even associated with them. And then you have King and Black, who are very talented on their own. They're going to be doing singles things, but also as a tag team. Just that, I don't know, it seems like the tag division has no direction. But the fucking spot where Brody King did like a pile driver to Jalisco onto a ladder, and then Jalisco was fucking selling like he had broken his neck. Like, that spot is like, that's not necessary. And then you had pictures, and then Dax Harwood posted a picture of himself in the airport. I think he had a black eye or his eye was swollen.
Yeah, but this is once again, you know, you're doing too much for something that no one really needs to do it. Like it's not necessary. It's all this debauchery of destruction. And you know, you people wonder why that we're seeing so many cases of injuries because of shit like this. And the problem is too is that I wouldn't mind seeing it on the pay-per-view. I get it. But the issue is that we're seeing it on the fucking TV shows. So it's watered down. It doesn't become exciting or climactic when you see it in a pay-per-view because you just saw it last week.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because on the go-home show up to this, they had that video game street fight thing in the main event where you had Takeshita give Kota Ibushi a tombstone pile driver to the outside of the ring. Not even like a minute, Kota Ibushi's right back up. Setting up spots.
Riding a bicycle. He's got a bicycle.
I mean, shit.
But yeah, it's like I said, all this go down for Bill and fucking Ricky Starks to retain.
Yeah, and we'll find out later on who they're going to be defending against. So I guess out of the four teams here, it made sense that they retained. Did it make sense? Oh, so especially since that they just won the belts a month ago, so it doesn't make sense to take them back off. But then, speaking of title changes, we had TBS Championship, Triple Threat. Statlander, Sky Blue, and Julia Hart. Julia Hart came out with the win here.
That was shocking. I was not expecting that.
I think everybody assumed Sky Blue was going to turn and join Julia and them two will like, become like a team or whatever the fuck. But now Sky is just having a darker character and Julia came out with the win here. And I'll say this was probably the best showing out of all three of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Nothing against Storm and Sheeta, but this was the best women's match on the show. All three busted their ass. Statlander, very underrated. I think she's improved a lot since she started. Sky Blue has a lot of potential, and same with Julia Hart. Julia is only 22 years old, and now she is going to be TBS champion, so let's see how far she could go with this.
Their youngest champ. That's her the youngest championship in the company's history. Well, good for her, man. Congratulations. She actually has been getting a good rub from a lot of people, and her wrestling has stepped up immensely, so congratulations to her.
Going into this show, we were promised that the newest signee would be announced, and it was hyped up that signee was respected by the whole locker room. And is arguably one of the best professional wrestlers in the world. Will Ospreay signs with AEW.
Expected. I know a lot of people were like, out of that, he's still on the New Japan. His contract is not up yet. But
as he explained, I give New Japan credit that they let this dude they let him sign this deal now. So
there's a lot going on with New Japan as well. Corporate wise and contractually with talent over there, seems as though there's a lot of talent that's not happy as well. And I keep reading
a lot of things that people are working on without contracts.
Without contracts or on handshake deals, and there is some speculation of whether or not the company is still able to rely on talent, due in part to now that they're having other areas to go to wrestle and such. So it's on shaky ground. So I guess this is not an olive branch, but a way to show talent that they could play ball with them. Ospreay was, this is a better deal for him. I know a lot of people were sitting there hoping that he would go to WWE. He's not. I didn't think so. I didn't think it would happen. AEW gives him the flexibility that he likes. He gets to come as go as he please, in and out of the country. Doesn't have to worry too much about a visa and stuff like that. He still be able to do indie shows if he wants. He still has that availability, but and he's still young. So if he really wanted to cash in that WWE check, you know, he still got time. I believe he's only signed a 3-year deal with AEW. So that's not too bad.
I mean, I'm happy as a wrestling fan that I get to see him weekly. I mean, I could look him up online and see all this stuff, but to see him weekly on a TV show, the show, like, he could now showcase what he could do in front of a global audience on TV is pretty special to see. So,
look, bruv, I'm gonna be able to talk to you straight, bruv. I this shit is catchy to me. I like to hear him talk.
I will say too, for the people that reacted on Twitter, like the WWE fans that are pissed off that he didn't sign. Like, if he would have signed, you would have had a different reaction though. But when he signs with AEW, he goes, "Oh, nobody knows who the fuck he is, or he can't cut a promo, or blah blah blah." The tribalism at its finest.
Yeah, it's foolish. It's just ridiculous. I didn't expect it to happen, but it's cool. Like, you know, like I said, it fits him perfectly, and hopefully he could bring more eyes, and hopefully they could steer the ship in the right course while he's there.
Any matchup you're looking forward to?
Honestly, no.
I mean, him and Danielson at least once would be good. See him and MJF.
Yeah, but like I said, no, not really. Like, none.
Okay, you're just happy that he.
Yeah, I'm just happy that he's there and he could break it and shine a light to that place. What I don't want to see is AEW become New Japan Light. That's what I don't want to see. Let's do something different.
I mean, they brought Jay. I can see what you're saying. Next up, match of the night, in everybody's opinions, the most brutal death match in professional wrestling history: Hangman Adam Page against Swerve Strickland.
Yeah.
I wanted to throw all that hyperbole out there because that's what everybody came out of this match was saying. Meanwhile, I come out of this match with this sentiment that Swerve Strickland became a star, a major star after this match. I know Jay's going to go into a whole thing of like a lot of the shit these guys did need to do. With some of the spots were silly. I mean, the spot where Hangman Page was drinking his blood and then did the Triple H spit take was not necessary. The Shane Strickland stapling his chest was not necessary. But, I mean, these two guys nearly killed each other.
And for what? And this is a, and for what? It goes to show you that Shane Strickland can have been, which, by the way, congratulations, and not congratulations, but good look for Strickland. Or donning
two straight pay-per-view wins too. Let's be real, against a former champion,
and donning the attire of that resembled Bray Wyatt's attire. That was a tribute to Bray. I'm like I said, you got two guys in the ring who could actually work, regardless of people who could say what they say about Hangman and his personality. The guy could work, and if you were going to put Shane over, more power to you, because it's well deserved. He needs to be on another level. But at the same time, you're doing it with not even paying attention for match wise. It's just of the shock and gore of what it is. Look, I get it. It's a blood feud. Why is it a blood feud? Because Shane started by pointing out the obvious with Hangman. Okay.
he broke into the Hangman's house child.
No, I got that. I got that during it, but to start the feud was basically Shane coming out and stating the obvious about
People like you get more opportunities than people like me.
Right. So that's what started this. Okay. That's why it became a blood feud. Fine. But even still, you know, the stapling of the cheek, the blood spot. I was told by someone that it was like they should have put a disclaimer on before this match because this went borderline, like indie backyard shit. Like to me it was a bit too much. It wasn't necessary and look, man, I'm glad that Shane gets the win here and Strickland deserves to get the rocket put on his back and hopefully they find a way to get him in that main upper tier card. But I was just fucking done with this once this match was over. I was like, fuck this.
Thoughts on Prince Nana?
Well, that was probably the highlight of the whole thing, the with the dancers and the.
I love how like that whole entrance was like so like fun and like such a precursor to what the fuck was about to happen. Like you're like sitting there laughing and like amused at Prince Nana with the dancers, and then like once the match started and all the blood started spewing, you're like, oh my god, like what, like Jesus Christ. Yeah. I guess I see what you mean, bro. Like they didn't have to go that far, but I see what they were trying to do. They're trying to show a sicker, like darker side of like Strickland.
Yeah. The Shane was at the Rams game the next night. Funniest shit, there's a video going around on TikTok where the Rams scream out "Whose house?" and the camera turns and it's Shane Strickland sitting there. He just looks at the camera like, really?
He's like, really? I should I say something?
He's like, come on.
Next up. Okay. We have Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho versus the Young Bucks. Now, I don't know about you, but I think I'm sick of the whole storyline of Kenny, you're our friend. Don't talk to anyone else. Don't team up with anybody except us.
They're like jealous bitches. Like,
I swear to God. I mean, like this company's been around 4 years, and I've seen this every year of the company's run in some form or fashion. Like what the fuck?
They're a PBS special. We go from the gore and the horror of a blood feud that just finished to a fucking Beverly Hills 90210 episode or some shit. Like, they're like Mean Girls. I don't know what the fuck to say. Like, they're just, it's just something needs to be said that I don't know if it's the writing, the booking of the Bucks, or it's just naturally them. They are fucking obnoxious little twerps, and it resonates through their wrestling and their characters. Don't get me wrong. I still like the Bucks as wrestlers. I think.
They're still like arguably one of the best tag teams going right now. But it's just like when you tell them to cut a promo or convey emotion, it's like, Jesus Christ, you guys don't know what the fuck you're doing.
No, it's they're nauseating and they're
you don't buy it. Like you're supposed to feel bad for them. Meanwhile, I don't feel bad for you at all.
And they both look like two individuals I know I can beat up easily. Like honestly, like I look like I can go and like really beat them up, and they'll just go whine and call the cops or something. Like I can't take them serious.
Now, as far as this match goes, I'll ask you this: when it comes to certain stipulations, like certain stipulations to matches, you can be like, okay, that outcome's going to happen. So in this match, it was, if the Bucks win, Jericho and Omega can't team up anymore. But if Omega and Jericho win, they get the tag title shot that the young Bucks were holding on to.
What a stupid fucking stipulation.
So going into this,
fucking dumb.
Was it obvious. With, oh, fuck it. Nobody cared about this match, honestly.
No, no, no. There was nothing there that said, that screamed, I need to invest in this match. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, we have Omega and Jericho win the match. And now they have the tag title shot that the Young Bucks earned all those months, well, like a month ago at WrestleDream. And after the match, they try to shake hands, but the Young Bucks threw a hissy fit. And now we had Brandon Cutler go to social media and say that the Young Bucks are going to be taking some time off for personal reasons. Okay.
Looks as though
Don't let the door hit you in the ass when you go home.
Well, you know, they'll be back to, I guess, find another way to be scorned or upset with their friends. So, and they'll just be madder. They'll be just a little bit more angrier.
So the tag title match now, we should be getting in the future, Omega and Jericho against Starks and Big Bill. So interesting dynamic there, but we'll have to wait and see how that happens.
Mm.
Okay, so we're at the main event. So throughout the show, they did a segment where they brought out Tony Schiavone, and they announced that MJF is not medically cleared to wrestle. So in the contract that they signed for the title match, Jay White put in there that if MJF cannot compete or anything happens, he gets the title automatically. So with Adam Cole making his return on the Zero Hour, he said, I'll wrestle.
Well,
remember, logic hole.
Well, before that, MJF was going into the ambulance and he screamed, don't let him take the belt. Don't let him take the belt from me.
Yeah, doing his best Roddy impression, screaming at him. Right. Adam, don't let him take the belt. But first, logic hole number one.
Mm.
Because if MJF is not medically cleared, why is Adam Cole then medically cleared if the fucker is on one leg?
The other thing for me is, I mean, I guess I could understand because the belt is custom made for MJF, so there is a certain connection with him. But for me, I'm going like, you're mad because they took a belt. Who gives a fuck? Everybody knows you're a champion anyways. Who gives a shit? It's a fucking prop. Who cares? But
yeah, but I think my thing, or a lot of people's thing, was the whole injury thing. Like,
yeah,
but whatever. So we get towards this match. Jay White makes his entrance. Adam Cole is about to come out, and then in the parking lot, we see the ambulance is back, and Jeff drove it back, I assume.
Oh God, another one of those.
Came back, and they actually had.
Why isn't anybody getting charged with Grand Theft Auto for stealing an ambulance?
Yeah, by the time MJF should have got to the ramp, the cop should have been there and said, hold on, did you just steal that ambulance?
Exactly. It just looks cool to pull up on an ambulance. Shut up.
Wrestling Jay.
Right.
So anyway, this Jay White had, I don't want to say he got buried. Jay White was not buried in all of this match. It's just the whole logic holes would harm this match into certain aspects, but as far as a wrestling match, MJF and Jay White fucking nearly killed each other, where MJF placed Jay White on the announce table, the table collapsed, but MJF said fuck it and still hit a diving elbow onto Jay White, onto the floor, doing more damage to his leg. And for the people that say MJF only has certain like one or two moves, MJF hit a fucking cutter outside to Jay White, who's standing on the ring apron, onto the floor. And this guy, and MJF is the type of dude that said on social media, doing dives is like for everybody else, like for special occasions. And this guy is doing suicide dives, and then he did a cutter to the floor.
Yeah, but this is why I said that he won't be leaving, because he has that flexibility not to wrestle all the time. So he's able to showcase stuff like that when he has to, because you don't see him wrestle all the time. So he's able to pull out stuff like that when he can. That's why I think it's smart for him to
take whatever deal AEW gives him, and also for him to hone his craft a little bit more. It's fine. It's good. And in this match was a display of why he's needed and why he needs to stay in AEW.
I love this too, because it's another character arc for MJF where he was willing to do anything possible to retain his title.
Right.
So then we get to the finish where Adam Cole throws in the Dynamite Diamond ring to his buddy MJF.
Yeah, that ring uses the ring. That ring has way too many like appearances outlets to be shown, because they used that, they were trying to use that ring often in this match.
Yeah, and also a theme of the night too was low blows. It's like after the first match, everybody was hitting a low blow out of their fucking ass.
Yeah,
but I'll say the finish for this, I felt short, because I felt MJF should have won with something else. The Dynamite Diamond ring at this point has been overused.
Yeah. It's,
especially if like if MJF's doing a babyface thing, like don't win with a fucking ring.
Yeah, that's the
like,
word. That's the word I wanted to use. Overused. Idiot. That's exactly what it is.
Right. Yeah. It also, it only took one shot to the face.
Right.
Like that. That's where I think people were kind of thinking like what the hell? What the hell, Jay White? Like it took like three Rainmakers to beat you, but one shot from a diamond ring and you're done. So, I can see where people are coming from, but MJF does retain, and then we had like them go him and MJF, no MJF and Adam Cole go to the top of the ramp, and it kind of looked like they're teasing something because it was a long, awkward pauses, like, and then the show just went off the air. No devil sighting, no video, no nothing, no, just go off the air with MJF retaining the title.
Yep. I guess at World's End, we're going to see possibly the closure of this storyline with the devil. But also, will the friendship make it through the new year? Excuse me.
Yeah.
We shall see.
Yep. And also, around that time, too, the week before said show, is when a lot of the people that got fired from WWE in September are now eligible to sign. So
I mean, yeah, we already know Dolph is going to go that way, and
yeah, Mr. Ziggler might show up at World's End.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll make my comment about it.
We'll cross that bridge another day. But as far as this show, I'll say another solid show. But I think these shows really need to scale down on the matches, especially like. We don't need to go till midnight for all these AEW shows. It's you can cut like the Claudio Matthews match did not need to be on the show. The Ring of Honor world title, a good portion of these matches could have been on TV, but they used them on pay per view. So,
oh please, it's gonna get worse because now that we're gonna have this round robin continental tournament shit going on. Which, by the way, Eddie Kingston said he's going to be defending both titles during the tournament. Listen, you're going to need a scoreboard and a motherfucking and a calculator to be able to follow this shit. But hopefully they make it as simplistic as possible for the fans to even pay attention to it, even care about it.
Another title for AEW. Yeah. So the Triple Crown Continental, whatever the fuck they call it.
Is it? I thought it was just for that. I thought it was for that belt.
They're combining. It's combining the New Japan Strong Open Weight and the Ring of Honor titles, and then making a whole title, another title on its own.
Oh fuck! Whatever. All right.
Meanwhile, they're doing all this in the Ring of Honor Final Battle in 2 weeks.
Whatever, bruv.
And participants so far are Danielson, Andrade, Mark Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston.
Mm.
I will say, I mean, I'll be interested in the matchups because it's going to be different with, like, especially with Mark Briscoe back, Danielson. God forbid, like, he doesn't hurt himself any more than he already is. So, That's another dude like Darby. That's if you're hurt, just stay out and just like, stay healed until. Brian Danielson has a Wrestle Kingdom match that everybody's been waiting
for.
So.
I don't know how he's going to make it in for that with a broken orbital bone. That shit.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony Schiavone. You told us he was going to be out for the remainder of the year. The fuckers in the tournament.
Right.
But that was Full Gear. I give this show a thumbs up still. It's still a solid show.
Yeah, look, I was happy to see Julia Hart get the win. The MJF storyline stuff, it's still working for me. It's still there. I mean, even though, like you said, some of the stuff is just nonsensical. They're doing everything in their damnedest to make sure that people keep their eyes on the prize with MJF being loaded up on the card. The Edge and Christian angle has been going over. It works well. And I guess everything else on the card was just like, eh. Especially the whole blood feud shit. But now, you know, I can say that that's over. But other than that, it was a decent pay-per-view. It wasn't one of their best, in my opinion. It was just average for me. And it was, like I said, just too damn long.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, we got Survivor Series predictions.
Yes, I have the card right here. Survivor Series War Games is live Saturday. So here are the matches. We only have five of them. First up, we have Gunther defending the Intercontinental title against The Miz.
This should be an immediately squash match. This is squashing shit out of Miz. But they're not.
I guess I'm gonna make this competitive in some aspect. So
I guess this is Miz's foray, you would say, into being somewhat of a face.
Yeah, we're just hitting low blows to try and get the upper hand. But that segment last night on Raw was kind of weird.
Yeah.
The segments where like they demean the Miz for no reason, and then. I mean, a lot of people have mixed feelings on The Miz. Like they feel like he's not deserved, or he's a company stooge. Whatever you think about The Miz busts his ass like everyone else on the roster. So as long as he gives 100%, I'm fine with it. But Gunther should retain.
Gunther retains. Yeah,
The Miz should not be beating him for the belt. For the women's world title, we have Rhea Ripley defending it against Zoe Stark.
Yeah, no surprise here. Rhea retains.
Yeah, I feel bad for Zoe though. I see what Triple H is trying to do, get women on the roster, more TV time, and give them different opportunities or more opportunities.
But I think Zoe's going to showcase. She's going to do a good job. Showcasing herself and being able to show that she could work, and I always thought she can. So I think this is going to be a good spot for her in a pay per view.
They have a bar to set because last year's women's match was god awful with Ronda Rousey and Shotzi, so they need to do better than last year.
Right,
and I believe in both these women. So they definitely
believe
will.
Me. In the end, and at the entrances, that's when they're gonna fucking they're gonna be past the bar.
Pretty much. Next up, the LWO explodes as Carlito versus Santos Escobar.
Did this happen too fast for you?
Yeah. I see why, because Ray got hurt, so they needed to elevate or move the dissension pretty quick. Because I did think I knew Santos was going to turn on them eventually, but it was like the Friday immediately after Crown Jewel, and it was like Carlito right away was like Ray, don't blame yourself, don't blame Logan, it's this guy over here that cost you the title.
Right.
And then the turn immediately happened that night. Like, they didn't wait like a few weeks or anything, but yeah. I mean, do you feel, I feel underwhelmed about Carlito's return. Like, it's not really it was expected. I don't even know what I'm supposed to expect from it.
It's, just a lot of Spanish people mad at each other. Sounds like my Thanksgiving at my family's house. So we're cool. I'm cool with that. But
The big rumor is that Angel Garza and Roberto Carrillo are going to join Santos Escobar and split off from the LWO.
Yeah, and I hear Dragon Lee might get involved in this as well. So we should see. Yeah. You know, you need to see some different looks when it comes to the talent within, when you're not chasing a title. What brews up? What kind of interest you could get from the fans with different kind of storylines and stuff? So this is gonna be interesting.
I got Santos for the win, but I mean, I feel bad for guys like Joaquin and Cruz, who, if they are gonna bring Angel and Humberto and align them with Escobar, them two guys are fucked. They're a good team, but I mean, when they started off in NXT, this was Legado del Fantasma, and now it's just
right.
I don't know what Zimbabwe's, but the new Legado 2.0, we'll have to wait and see.
Possibly.
So, Jay, we now get into War Games. We'll start with the women. We have Team Damage Control of Bayley, Asuka, Io Sky, and Kairi Sane, taking on Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, Shotzi, and Becky Lynch.
I'm interested in seeing how they're going to play off Bayley getting kicked out of the group, and how it's going to play out during the match.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that Damage Control gets the win here because no. Let me flip it. Damage Control loses
Bayley takes the fall.
Right. Because of Bayley. And that's when they'll kick her out.
Because whether people like it or not, they don't want all the Asian women to gang up and join together and beat up the one American.
Hey, Dakota Kai. Oh, yeah, she is, because she's like, I think she's like Filipino or something like that. So, yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, right now she's not wrestling, so
yeah, but still, you know, she's still part of it. But.
Right. I mean, I look at this match and it kind of reminds me of last year's War Games, where they had the Bloodline against Brolin, Bruce, McIntyre, Owens, where it was like I was dead set on saying like this is when the Sami Zayn's gonna get kicked out of. Like, no, they did the complete opposite. So I could see the Damage Control win. I mean, they just put this whole Asuka in the group. And Kairi just came back, so I don't know, but I got the baby faces winning. And then we go into the main event with the men's War Games match. We have the Judgment Day, Damian Priest, Finn Bálor, Dominic Mysterio, JD McDonagh, and Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and the returning Randy Orton.
This is going to be fun. And I like the small cue that that Jay did when he announced that Randy Orton's going to be there, and the face he made, because it's like,
oh shit.
Forget it. I fucked over a lot of people.
Yeah. In case anybody forgot, it was because of the Usos and Roman Reigns. Randy Orton was out for nearly a year.
Right. So this is gonna be fun.
Randy Orton in a War Games match.
You know, and I like this as well because it gives something. It gives Cody something to do while, you know, in the middle of all the continuing the story. This actually gives him something to do. I actually got Judgment Day winning this one.
Really? Explain.
Yeah. I think this is something that elevates the group a little bit more, gives more validity now that they're all on the same page somewhat. I know there's still some dissension that's going on within the group, but I think this is where they win, and it shows later on and on Raw and such that they can be a force to be reckoned with as a group. Rhea will find a way to get involved in this match. And I think we got to get the heels a win here.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but I think for the story, I mean, Cody needs to continue overcoming these obstacles in the way of him getting to the WWE Championship. So I would say his team wins. I do see them teasing a spot where Jay and Randy are kind of staring at each other, and Jay and Randy's like, "I haven't forgotten." But I think when they first announced like Rollins was in the match, I did think like him and Cody were going to clash, but that's probably going to be a spot in this match as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really excited to see Randy Orton back, just to see like how he looks in the ring physically. And I mean, let's be real here. We want to see him RKO Rhea Ripley. We need to see that spot.
Right.
And then Drew McIntyre, who, not going to say he turned fully heel. He really didn't even, he said, I'm not a member of the Judgment Day. I'm just going to team with you guys to take out Jey Uso. So that's another interesting thing, because I could see where, like, it's not going in their favor, and Drew just leaves the cage and says, fuck this, I'm out.
Right.
And then you have like Dominic and like JD McDonough get destroyed. I do see, like, I think Dominic is going to take the fall, so I do think the baby faces are going to get the win here.
Oh, okay.
I think in the War Games matches, it pretty much could be baby faces going over in the War Games, in both of them.
Okay. And finally, does Phil pop up during Survivor Series?
Kind of like Enzo Amore did all those years ago. He showed up in the crowd and said, "I'm here, fuckers."
Does Phillip Brooks show up at Survivor Series? It's been said that Nakamura has been calling him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a little.
It could be him. I mean, let's be real here too. If they would have promoted on Raw, like if they said at Survivor Series, Shinsuke Nakamura versus a mystery opponent, the internet would be going fucking nuts right now, because they would say, oh, it's going to be Nakamura versus CM Punk. But it would be fucking hilarious if, like, when Nakamura says, I'm calling you out, you know who you are, and Brock Lesnar's music hits in Chicago.
I'll tell you one thing. With all the teasing and such like that, if he doesn't pop up, that crowd, by the time War Games happen,
Until Randy's music hits and he runs into the cage, it's going to be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, and they're going to fucking lose their shit if they don't see him. And in Chicago, they're going to lose everybody by the main event. I'm sorry. They're just going to lose. The crowd is not going to let them have it. I mean, they're going to let them have it. They're not going to let them live it up. So
I can definitely see, like, the women's War Games match will open the show, and that will probably get the crowd happy. And then by the time when, like, Carlito and Santos do their match, Ripley and Stark do their match, it's going to be filled with CM Punk chants, like, nonstop. Gunther and Miz might get some chance, but people are going to be reacting more to, like, Gunther's moves. But then, I think you agree with me, by the time the main event starts, the chants will go nuts until Randy Orton's music hits, and then RKO, and then the crowd will leave somewhat happy.
Possibly. Yeah. It's going to be interesting, but that's going to wrap us up here, guys. Much to talk about this week on the episode. I want to thank our boy Homework Mike for stopping in. Got a discussion with Indie Guy, Indie Sensation, AEW wrestler at for one night only. One night only. Alvin Alvarez Stopson. Cool guy, man. It was a good conversation we had. We discussed getting into wrestling, how he became a late bloomer into the business, his relationship with a certain AEW star, and bowling. Yeah, we went to bowling. So, guys, don't go anywhere. Stick around. We got much to talk about. See you guys in a second. Cut an ID. Just say this is
just like you did the heartbreak chick, Tiffany Ann, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Okay. This is Tiffany Ann, a.k.a. the EVP of Giggles and the Heartbreak Chick, and you're listening to the Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Brought this wrestler per se because of his not only his skill in the ring, but also because I guess I would say because he equates to what goes on here in Turnbuckle Tabloid. Shout out to our boy referee Angel Cruz. He's very in tuned with individuals that are on the same wavelengths of here in Turnbuckle Tabloid, and he brought us a guy who I've seen in the indies for some time, but did not know that he was getting a wave happening in the recent days. Our boy Alvin and Alvin Averez. Is this how we're doing it? Are we making it a staple this day and age of wrestling? Because seems to be on the radar for a lot of indie fans, man. How's that been going for you?
You know what? It's crazy, man. It's it's a feeling. It's a certain feeling, like when you know stuff is clicking. Early on in my training, I was trained by Tony Nese and Alex Reynolds. And Tony Nese is a good friend of mine. I actually grew up with him. I went to high school, junior high school together. And so talking to him early in my training, when he was like, all right, listen, you know how to do the moves. You know ring psychology. Now you just got to get out there and get reps. And I was getting a couple reps. I started to work at Ace Pro Wrestling. We'll probably dive into that. I'll dive into this in a little bit. But as I got started my indie career, he was like, listen, eventually wrestling is going to click for you and everything's going to make sense. And 2023 is that year where wrestling just clicked, my man. How are you? Long introduction, but how are you?
No, believe me, I'm great. I've been at happy hour. I'm still indulging. By the way, I if you don't see on the video right now, this Tumblr that I have, it's fucking awesome. Because not only does it have the dispensary on the top, but it has the drinks on the bottom, and you could do whatever concoctions you could do. It's awesome.
That's awesome. There you go. And it's concealed. It's black, man.
And nobody knows. And then you hit the top. More shots to your drink. But how long you been wrestling,
Plastic. 11 years. Just over 11 years now.
So yeah. For the 11 years, a lot of times people will sit there and think like, yeah, after three, if it's not happening for me, then what the fuck am I going to do? What keeps you going to stay in the business?
You know, that's the wrong mindset. If you come into wrestling thinking that mindset, you're in the wrong business. As a professional wrestler, and I learned this a lot from Arn Anderson. I've been listening to his podcast a lot. So if you're not checking it out, if you're a fan listening to this, or even if you're a wrestler listening to this, please check out Arn Anderson's podcast with Conrad Thompson, The Arn Show. I've learned so much as a wrestler just listening to Arn talk. And he said he didn't find his flow until he was about 4 years in. Mm. Now, back then in the early 1980s, they were wrestling 330 something days a year. So I have about over 300 matches now in an 11-year career. He was getting that in a year, and he didn't find his stride till he was 4 years in. So what does that tell you? That tells you that no one's near their stride. So I'm just now kind of finding my stride and finding my thing that works for me, and hopefully something works out, you know?
Well, it's great that you mentioned that, because back in the 70s, 80s and such, they didn't really have that availability to have indies where you guys are able to work out, have that ability to work in front of a crowd, be able to work on your craft. But the other thing is that, you know, like the old school wrestlers would say, the workers would say, is that you pick up bad habits doing that. How are you able to balance that off, that you're able to figure out what's good as a worker or what's your niche? Or how are you able to figure that out?
Once you learn, I'm going to quote the Arn Show probably this whole hour. Another thing I learned from Arn is once you know how to work, you can learn this business, man. He says it: learn how to work, learn how to talk, work on your body. And as long as you know how to work. Now, working is different from wrestling. A lot of people think wrestling is working. It's not. Wrestling is me entering the building, going in one locker room, my opponent entering the building, going in another locker room. We don't see each other until we're in the ring and we create a story. That's working. Not a lot of wrestlers these days know how to work.
Right.
When you learn how to work, you could be in the ring with anybody. I could bring my girlfriend Callan right now in the ring with me, and we'll have a decent match because I know how to work, and I'll talk her through everything, and mm-hmm. she'll know exactly what to do. She may not be good at it, perfect at it, but she'll know what to do. And it'll be like, okay, all right, that was decent, you know, because we know how to work. So I could walk into any independent fed, no matter how popular, how bad it may be. And I could be in the ring with anybody, and I could just talk them through it, and we go through it in the back. We have time to talk it over, and I'll say, hey, do you know how to do this? You know, what are three of your best moves you can do? Right. And I'll plug them and play them, and we'll tell a nice little story. You know, so anybody that comes in and think I'm too big for this federation is stupid, because me walking into a federation that may not be as popular, I'll come in maybe as, I guess, the veteran, if you want to toss that word around. I'll come in as a guy with more experience, and I'll try to teach. I'll coach. This is what wrestling's all about. It's not about myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the star coming in. And a lot of guys come in thinking they're the star. They're not the star. You're just a part of the whole entire story. So you have to come in and play that part of the story. So, yeah, I could walk into any fed and kind of work with the guys and coach and get them through a story. And if they learn something from me, that's awesome.
What's the bigger work, wrestling or real life?
Real life's the biggest work. Once you know that life is revolved around money, things will start to make sense.
Yeah, I sat there and realized that once I thought that I want to be an adult was going to be great. I realized that's where their real business was at. I was like, shit.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon or the Jim Crockett of our real life are really handling business on us. But when did you get the calling of becoming a wrestler? When did it happen for you?
You know, I started watching wrestling in 1997. I was 14 years old.
Was it the grandparents? Did the grandparents bring you in?
No, you know what? It was me. You know, I'm a big Mike Tyson fan.
Oh, okay.
So my father was a big Mike Tyson fan. So I've been watching Mike Tyson fights since the 80s.
Oh, okay.
So when he came back in 96, I always watched his fights. So when he got in a fight with Holyfield and he bit his ear, he was suspended from boxing. Mm. So I'm flipping through the channels Monday night. I'm flipping through the channels and I happen to catch Nitro. And I'm starting to watch. I'm like, oh, I've heard about wrestling. Like, people in school talk about it. I've heard about it. So I'm watching it, and I'm in, like, it kind of brought me in. I saw Hogan. It was actually a match I was watching was Hogan versus Lex Luger for the WWE title. And it's the one where Luger went over.
Right.
And so I see just Hogan in the rack, and I'm like, wow, it's interesting. I was like, whoa. And it's, I guess the way Tony Schiavone put it over was like this big moment that I'm watching. So I felt like I was watching this big wrestling moment. And I'm like, oh, man, I could just drew me in. And then I remember watching the Giant. Just it looks like he was wiping, trying to get the NWO off the world title.
Right.
And I see him in the back, and he's in a locker room, and everyone got the champagne, and you know the babyface locker room got the champagne. I just remember that image. And fast forward to when I saw Paul White at AEW, I wound up talking to him about that. Mm. So it's kind of cool how wrestling flipped full circle for me. But so I remember just watching him just wipe off the belt. And I was hooked immediately into Nitro. And the way Tony Schiavone would lead us off the air, he always made us want another hour and watch more. So every time Nitro ended, I was like, oh, I want to can't wait to next week. And next week led to next week led to next week, and I was hooked.
Well, you think about it, you mentioned Tyson to be your introduction to this, but it's also a thing to where with us, it's one of two things in a household. It's sports, music,
the arts and cartoons, whatever, and wrestling, whatever. What was your first like real pull before wrestling became that?
My real, I would say it would be boxing was my real first pull. I played a little football, but really what grabbed my attention sports wise was boxing. And it was Mike Tyson.
That's Did you have a box? Do you ever train for it?
No. Which is funny. Nobody I knew ever boxed. So, but I guess maybe the way Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet and the way he carried himself, the charisma, that's what draws people in. People think, it is the skill. I'll lie to you if I said it wasn't. It is the skill, but what really draws you in is that charisma, and that's really what drew me in. And just the way he carried himself to the ring and how he would walk the ring and the way, also the way commentary put him over too, you know? And they don't even mean to put him over like that, but they're putting him over because they talk about how he used to wear no socks, you know, when he come, or no robe, no sock, like a warrior. And they put him over as a warrior, and he looked like a warrior. So it's believability, you know?
It's funny you said that because I would think that you would gravitate that as a gimmick for you to try to work that.
A little bit. I used to always wear a Mike Tyson shirt in the backyard, when he's wrestling in the backyard.
I would think that you will wear like, you know, the black tight shorts, you know, that them gimmicks, black boots or sneaks, whatever the case, and come out with the white towel with whatever it is going, and go out there and play something like that.
You know, I have something that comes similar. I don't have the actual like the cutout towel that Tyson used to wear, but I have like a throw.
Right.
So my heel gimmick, I throw this throw over myself. So it's kind of similar, and I kind of carry myself like him a little bit.
I don't know. Maybe we might want to lean to that a little bit more.
I may. We'll see. Maybe I'll do something where I can rip it off. So, yeah, we'll see something. Listen, man, I'm just finding my stride now. I'm just now trying new things. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to mess with my hair differently and stuff like that. I just turned 42, so I'm just trying new things. It's working. Something's working. So I'm throwing some stuff out there, see what works, trying different things for my entrance, different things, how I put moves together. So we'll see what works, you know.
But it's a good thing that for you to mention that your age, because a lot of wrestlers would not like to put that out there because, you know, they think that it demeans or maybe hinders them to get in the ring as such. But this day and age, we see this now is like it doesn't even matter anymore. Right now, it's how you are or how you are as a worker. You go in there, you put it in, and now with the open forum of possible opportunities when it comes to promotions, you know, it's what you're comfortable of doing. Are you with the years you have in, are you okay with where you're at? I mean, I always say that, you know, we're wrestlers, it becomes, I want to play for the Yankees, and the Yankees are, you know, WWE. But right now, you made your foray and went through AEW. Like, how are you okay with what your positioning is right now and what could be your possibility?
I'd be lying to you if I said I'm not, because I always want better. So I always want the next step, next better, something better, you know. So when I did the extra work for AEW back in May at the UBS Arena, I finally got that taste, and it's like, oh, man, it's a drug. It really is. Once you get that, it's the first taste, right? So once I got that just arena feeling, and the feeling, like a lot of people asked me about it, like a lot of wrestlers, they asked me about the feeling I had. Was I really like nervous? And I remember asking Tony Nese this on his wedding day. I was one of his groomsmen, and this is when he came back from TNA. And I asked him, and I go, how nervous are you right now on your wedding day? And he said, just about as nervous as when I did TNA. So I go, all right. I go, okay, fair enough. So I gauged that. So when I remembered that. So when I stepped in the ring for AEW, this was now the second time, because we did the Dark Order match first. We taped that first. And then we did the live Dynamite with the Blackpool Combat Club. So we actually had the commercial break to kind of be in the ring. I was in the ring maybe for about, I would say, 2 to 3 minutes during commercial. And I took the time to just look around and and take it in, because not a lot of people get a chance to take it in. And I got a chance to wrestle for WWE one time, and it was so fast. I was in the ring and out so quick, and I didn't get a chance to take it in. It was in the Boston Garden.
Right.
But so for AEW, I finally got the chance to take it in. I kind of looked around, and I wasn't nervous at all. And just right before we went on live TV, first time I'm ever on live television, and I'm not one bit nervous.
Nice.
Not at all. And I want to be honest that I wasn't. I was excited. I was ready. And I saw Dean come. Dean Ambrose, calling him by his own name. Saw John Moxley come by. I see John. I see the guys. I see Danielson. And they come through and the lights come on. And Aubrey was the referee. And she's like, "Showtime." And we're like, "All right." And I was just so ready. You know, we did our spots and stuff and able to take the pile driver on the floor. It was just a really cool experience to just do that. But like I said, once you get that, now you want more. So I always want more. I'm never going to be happy. I'm okay where, I'd be lying if I said I was okay where I'm at, because I'm not. You know, I always want more, and I'm always trying to put more out there. So we'll see what 2024 has for Alvin Alvarez.
How does it come so late to you? Because you said 11 years, you're 40, and you're probably, you know, As Bobby Heenan would say, you're digging graves early on. You're out there laying pipelines and stuff like that. But how did wrestling come to you so late that you said, I'm gonna do this now in my late 20s to maybe hit a miss? How did this come to you?
You know. Like I said, I grew up with Tony Nese. Me, him, and another friend of mine, Jeff, wanted to be an Apollyon in NYWC. The three, Apollyon was the first to start training. He started training when he was 16, and then Nese started training when he was 18. So that was early 2000s. So I got a chance to stop by the Critical Mass Training School, which is the original NYWC kind of school.
Yeah.
It was called Critical Mass Pro Wrestling.
Okay.
And they ran a school out of Hicksville. So I went to visit them. That was 2003. So I went to visit there, and I just remember in the ring, I remember Pop and I was in the ring, and I remember Nese was in the ring, and I believe was Dickie Rods and a couple guys like that. And I remember they were just beating the hell out of Nese, which is our friend. And we're just watching our friend just get his ass kicked. And I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this right now. And I was it. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't ready. And then I went home. I remember talking to my dad because I was very close to my parents. And my mom used to watch wrestling with me as well. So I was very close to them. So I wanted to have the conversation. Like, all right, like, I want to do wrestling, but I don't know. And my dad is my parents are big college people. Both my parents have master's degrees.
Right.
So it's like it wasn't even an option for me not to go to college. Like, if I said I wasn't going to college, I'd be out in the street. Like, that's how it was. Like, and my parents even made it so sweet. They were like, listen, if you just go to college, we'll pay for everything else. Just go to college. Like, I stayed home for free. They paid my car insurance.
Did you get a degree?
All I had to pay was my cell phone.
Did you get a degree?
I did. Yeah, of course I did. I got my 4-year degree from Dallin College in political science.
Nice.
Psychology.
Nice.
That was in 2005.
All right.
And then I started working with adults with disabilities.
Nice.
And then once I got into my career, that was at, now I'm 28, I was bowling with Tony Nese. Him and I always stay close. And he became head trainer at the NYWC Academy. So this is late 2010.
Oh, that's a nice year. That's a good year.
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah.
So he became trainer at the New York Wrestling Connections. Funny, it's on my shirt. NYWC.
I see you.
Support Live Jazz. NYWC. It's actually my dad made me the shirt. He just bought it by last weekend. And he's actually a jazz musician. My dad. So
oh, awesome.
Support Live Jazz.
What he plays? What does he play?
Everything. All saxophones, keyboards, piano. He teaches music too.
Oh shit! Yeah. We need
have him on the show.
We need, yeah. I might because we open up the floor to everything here. So I, as
you'll
long
see
as
where I get my charisma from.
As long as I can tag it to where the son of a wrestler has a father yeah, who does great in the business.
Yeah, right.
He's more over than you.
But yeah, I got caught off track.
No, that's all right. But you're coming up in the business.
So
you came in
late. Yes. So, 2010. So Nese became the trainer. and of the NYWC. So he's like, listen, either it's now or never, dude. Like, and he kept every week at bowling, because I bowl with him every Thursday. So every week at bowling, he'd come to me and be like, come on, man. Like, you're going to start now. Like, two new students started yesterday. Could have been you. And then finally, he's like, listen, I'm going to come to your house on Sunday. Have knee pads and wrestling shoes, and we're starting. And I was like, all right. And at that point, once he said that, drove off, I was like, I can't say no now. And I always wanted to do it. I don't want to feel like he forced me into this, because he did, by no means. I always wanted to do it, but he was that friend that looked out for you, didn't care about your feelings, but looked out for you. And I always have respect for Nice for that. And he knew I wanted to do it, and he was just like the battery in my back. And he finally got me in. And once that, so now every, it's funny, because now every time I wrestle 130%, because I never want to let him down, you know?
That's beautiful.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah, man. Because he pushed me. So now I have to prove myself, you know what I'm saying? So it's awesome, because I talk to him here and there when AEW comes up. You know, they're up now. They're going to be coming up on December 30th. So I try to, get in touch with him, and him and I hang out when he comes up. But yeah, because he lives in Florida now. He moved down to Florida.
Yeah, I understand the sentiment, because when I started this podcast, I'm doing it under somebody else's their company, and it's crazy, because I came in as a phone caller, and they had told me, and it was like, yo, you would be good at podcasts. I'm like, yeah, I would be. So
there you go. Yeah.
Every time I do this podcast, I do it as, like you said, like, I want to make them proud, and I want to get them the numbers. Yep. I want to get them the draws. I want to do that. But with that being said, with your bowl, how long you been bowling? That's actually,
oh man.
I mean, you threw that out there, and I'm like, we do it recreationally, but to be in a league is something different. Like, how long you been bowling? Yeah.
I've been bowling, it'll be 19 years in February. Yeah, bowling longer than I've been wrestling.
So you've been, so you know the whole skills of waxing the ball and having a certain type of glove or wrist or the curvatures and all that, making sure that the wax on the floor is applicable to the you guys and so. What's been more difficult to achieve, more in bowling or to get into wrestling?
Man, that's a good question. I've never been asked that question. I've done a lot of podcasts, and I've never been asked that question. That's a
because
really
this
good question.
Is why we do it, Turbo.
That's good. That's good. Here. Yeah, man. That's what we do, baby. Right here. Exclusive question, baby. Right here.
What's better, baby? Turbo
Tabloid.
To get better at bowling or get better at wrestling, baby?
Oh, man. You know what? What's harder to achieve?
What do you want to achieve, though? I mean,
that's different. Okay.
Have you bowled a 300?
I have 5 300 games.
Really? You got your ring. You have your rings and everything for it.
I have one ring. I got my first one. I got a ring for, and the rest I have plaques for. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Was the ring that you got, was it league wise or
you have to be in a league to be sanctioned. What's called by sanctioned by the USBC, which is United Bowling Congress. So you have to be in a league to be sanctioned to get these awards.
So what's your average in bowling?
217.
God damn! Now you're showing ass.
Not even that good. The guys on my bowling league on Thursday, man, these guys have no handicap. They're averaging 230.
Wow. 217 is fucking...
I'm in a high competitive league.
What's the weight of the ball? What you like to use?
I throw a 15-pound now. Because I actually throw it slow. You'll be actually surprised of my size and how I throw the bowling ball. I'm a more finesse guy.
What, a 15? 15 is 15.
I'm a finesse guy. Like, I'm more of style, and I try to just get the ball, like, rolled off my fingers.
just to get the noobs or the individuals who we're sidetracking for wrestling with, what's the highest weight of a bowling ball that you could use?
16,
right?
Yeah. Oh, I use a 15.
And you're using a 15 for finesse.
Yes.
Show off.
Because 16 I would throw too slow.
You're showing off. Let's be honest.
I want to throw it nice and firm, so
because you would always think that the lighter weighter balls would be able to be for spin. What's the texture of the balls you like to use?
Storm Roto Grip.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah,
that's my company, man. I've won my 300 games with Storm Roto Grip. Yeah.
So you are you on that level where you could go to the shop and get your fingers fit perfectly?
Oh yeah.
And
all my balls are custom. One of my good friends drills all my stuff.
There's a listener hearing this and they're going, pause, pause, pause. They're talking about balls. Pause. Probably. So much Harlem and Brooklyn stuff going on.
Crazy.
I love bowling, but I don't do it often. It's like one of those things that's so fun to do. It's like playing pool, but I can never sit there and say like I'm a pro. What was the easiest thing to bring you in, bowling or wrestling?
Wrestling was the easiest thing.
Really?
Yeah, I was drawn to wrestling fast. Yeah. As soon as I started watching it, I was hooked on. Bowling, I was going over and over and over and over again. I just kind of didn't feel like sitting around. So I feel like I'll just bowl with them. So that's how I started bowling. Actually, I just would bowl with them to pass the time. And then I would go to my friend's mom, who passed away a couple of years ago. We would go to bowling alley in Farmingdale, Long Island. And every Friday night, they would have their like league. And she actually, I could pace with them, so which is now you can bowl with the league.
Right.
You don't have to pay anything. So she actually started showing me how to roll the bowling ball. And after that, I kind of started getting, okay, I can kind of do this, whatever. But I didn't take it seriously until maybe like a year later. And then my friends were bowling, and then they finally were like, listen, we need somebody. Just do it. And I'm like, all right. Like, they dragged me in, you know? I'm like, okay. But then once I started bowling, that was it, man. I started getting hooked, and then I started bowling better. And I'm like, yo, let's see how far I can take this. And I have an addictive personality like that. Like, once I get on something, I'm locked in. Almost like a version of ADD. And once I see it, I'm locked in. So once I got to bowling, I'm locked in. I'm buying bowling books. I'm researching bowling. I'm learning the history of bowling. How did bowling start? Where did bowling come from? Who bowled? Who was the good bowlers? Who's the best bowler? So I started doing all my research, and I started learning how to bowl, learning how to lanes. I pretty much taught myself how to bowl. I would ask questions to bowlers I would know who I respected. One of them who I still bowl with today, Jay Marine, he's one of the first bowlers I ever watched and learned just by watching. And then I would ask him questions and pick his brain. It's funny, now we bowl every summer together. So I would just watch it, and that's how I would get hooked on the bowling. That's how I kind of taught myself how to bowl. Same thing with wrestling. You know, once it clicks, once I'm onto it and I click in and I want to learn about it. Right now I'm in the middle of watching the NWA, and I want to know who's Sam Muchnick? Who's this? Who's that? Who's Freddie Blassie? So now I'm researching wrestling, and I know the history of wrestling. Like I'm trying to be pretty much like a library where I could click off matches like this. Yeah, I want to know everything about it, because if I'm doing it, I should know the knowledge behind it. I should know who laid the forefront of it, because you can't be great without looking who was the greatest, you know. So,
yeah, I refer you. I'm listening to a podcast right now. Not a podcast, excuse me, audiobook. Todd is God, the originator of ECW. It's Todd Gordon. Todd Gordon's book. It's a great read. So I refer you to that. So if you want to know the early stages of ECW, and plus on the schematics of how that was put together and how wrestlers could get into business. But I'm now interested with the bowling thing, which is like, do you play in leagues where they change the wax on the floor and stuff like that they give you that, like the PBA and stuff like that? Do you ever play? You play in leagues like that?
I have, where they change the oil patterns.
The oil on the lane.
Yeah, the league on Thursday is a modified pattern because it's a 4-man full house league. So the oil, to keep up with the oil, they put a little more oil down. So it's like a modified pattern. But I bowled on different oil patterns. I've actually bowled in a number of PBA tournaments as well.
Do you equate that to the rings that you have to deal with from different promotions that you work on?
Yeah, it can get stressful. Bowling gets stressful just like wrestling does. Bowling and wrestling, they have their politics.
But what's the bigger headache to having to deal with a league that doesn't fit your bowling style, or promotion that you go to that's not fitting your wrestling style?
You know, I only really bowl Thursday nights now in one house, so it's really not too stressful. I'm the president of the league, so they bring you want the job? Come down. I'll give you the job. They can go see you every week.
Believe me, I've been a commissioner for a lot of other shit, and I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to do that.
Nah, whenever you're welcome, man. Job's yours. So that's not too stressful. So wrestling, dealing with promoters, especially carny promoters, you know, who think, you know, their company is the best, blah, blah, blah. It's not a thing. Yeah, it is what it is. But, you work them like you work anybody else. You work like you work the fans, you know?
But now that you've stepped your toe in the big leagues, because now that you were highlighted in AEW and such, how has that changed the approach to other promotions who've seen you now? Are they a little bit more approachable to booking you, or are they like less approachable because they know what your rate can be?
You know what? I was only featured one Dynamite, you know, as extra talent. A lot of workers don't look at it as being this super big opportunity. Like I don't think it's not a huge step up. Like if I was maybe signed to a contract, or maybe did a steady work at like Impact, or steady work at Major League Wrestling, or steady with the NWA, where you're steadily in the spotlight, then you could say, okay, my work rate is this. Then promoters would say, okay, it is what it is. But me, I did use the AEW stuff when I first went on to catch a little buzz, you know, shoot some emails to promoters, and I got some bookings from it, which is awesome. And then once I get there and I show them what I could do, you know, not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but I think my work is solid. So once I get in the ring and I show them what I could do, you know, usually they'll either want to book me long story, or they want to bring me in to work with their students. You know, that's kind of how I do with Warriors of Wrestling. You know, we did a matinee show. Joe Acasio brought me in for a matinee show out east. And I saw Joe Bellini there. And I've been messaging him for years trying to get Warriors. And he's always like, who are you? Who are you? So finally, when he got so many work, he's like, all right, that's the Alvin. How are you? And then finally, he messaged me to do a couple of Warriors shows. I did the King in New York. So it's kind of cool. So, yeah. So you take what you can get, and you try to use each opportunity to get the next opportunity, you know? So I got a chance to work at Battleground Championship Wrestling this in December. At the ECW Arena, so we'll see. I make connections there and see what happens, and try to just have the next promotion build it to the next promotion.
Yeah, it's like I said, I always admire the workload that you guys say and what you guys have to go through as wrestlers and such. And it's now a better era for you guys, because there's the opportunities there, you know, because of what's been opened up for you guys. And you know, AEW has this, and now Impact and TNA is doing this, the GCWs, mm-hmm. the HOGs and such. You guys have mm-hmm. this open avenue to possibly get booked and such, especially like right now. The New York area has been tough for a long time. How was it that you were able to manifest yourself in those 11 years to find bookings and get your ring work to be seen?
It's tough. You know, the New York market is very tough. So, but when I was coming up, I was lucky.
Especially knowing that how the, pardon me for saying that, but especially now how the licensing is, promoters are having to spend more for it in New York as opposed to everywhere else, but it is tough. So how is it that you've been, you
being able to take that.
You know what? I actually I was in good places at good times. You know, I have to say, because Jay Lethal says that a lot. If you ever listen to Jay Lethal's podcast, he's like, I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I feel like that too. I happen to just be in the right place at the right times. And, you know, so when I started in the business 2012, 2013, remember only WWE was really there. That's really only, we were all really shooting for that. I mean, Impact Wrestling was there. So that was a nice stepping stone. But it was really just a stepping stone. Like everybody wanted WWE. And at that point, you know, when I started getting my stride, 2016, 2017, I'm already 35, 36 years old at that point. So I'm already past now WWE age. So now it's just pretty much an indie grind. But I was able to just, you know, start with NYWC. And at the time, rewind back 2013, 2014, a lot of promotions were popping up around New York. So you had Five Borough Wrestling popping up, you know, and they would always book Nice. So I got lucky, you know, Tony Nice was a good friend of mine. So wherever kind of he popped up, he would put a kind of good word in for me. Hey, listen, I got the suit in here. He's a friend of mine, you know, put him on. He needed a worker, put him on. And it's kind of cool. So I kind of got here to air. And another good friend of mine, Cade Lothbrock, he also got me into Ace Pro Wrestling. So once I got there, it was really NYWC and Ace. I did those two promotions for the past really 11 years. Those were my concrete promotions, were always NYWC and Ace. And I was able to get my stride in Ace. I was able to turn heel in Ace and get my stride as a heel and really learn heel. So that's kind of how I really got my stride and working those two promotions. And Five Borough Wrestling was here a little bit. And then Creator Pro came about. So we got a chance to work with those guys. And it's just all intermingled with talent. House of Glory came about. So we were working with House of Glory guys and they were coming over. So we got a chance to work with guys like Anthony Gangone and Adam Kane, guys that trained by Red. We're all trained by Mikey. Kind of all of us are really trained by we're all come from the house of Mikey. House of Mikey Whipwreck, you know, because he really started, you know, training in Long Island. So his training went on to Brian Myers. He opened up Creator Pro. He trained Pat Buck, opened up Creator Pro. He trained Amazing Grant. Brian Excel opened up House of Glory. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of training schools here, we all come from Mikey's training, you know?
Yeah, I come to the same school because I got into podcasting late. And I always said that I'm the kind of dude that says I might be late to the party, but as soon as I show up, I'm bringing the keg. I'm that guy. Yep. I'm a show. Yep. Is this the same mentality that you have, especially when it comes to a lot of these young talents that's being displayed and showcased, where you're the guy that's, you know, older, not only in age, but as an experience wise that you came in later on? How comfortable have you been with doing that?
You know, I've been very comfortable. You know what I'm saying? I don't mind my age. I don't mind my experience level. So I come at any situation with the mentality of helping. You know, that's how you have to look at it. You can't look at it as, oh, I'm the oldest guy here. I have to do X, Y, Z. I'm the oldest guy here. I deserve X, Y, Z. A lot of people get caught up and they come in thinking wrestling owes them something. Thinking when they show up, oh, I expect this. I've been in the business for 15 years. I expect this. I walk into any promotion just like I'm a student, like I'm a year in. Hey, how are you? How are you? Introduce myself to everybody just like I would if I was a year in. You know what I'm saying? I don't look at my experience level as I deserve this. Hey, when I walk in, I deserve everybody to come to me. Never. I would walk in, go up to each person just like I would day one of training school. You know, so you have to walk into any promotion and think how you can help. So it doesn't matter my age, my experience level. You know, at this point, a lot of companies are bringing me in to work a lot of their students. And that's easy, man. That's a night off for me. You know what I'm saying? Work with students is a night off. I don't even think twice about it. I don't need to be in the main storyline. Hey, man, put me on first, second, third. The crowd is hot. Put me out. I'll put one of the top students over. We go home. You know what I'm saying? And that's it. And so you have to look at it like that. You have to, how are you going to give back to this company? You know, how can I make Warriors of Wrestling better? How can I make Victory Pro Wrestling better? How can I make, you know, the New York Wrestling Connection a better product for people to come to watch? What can I do in the ring that can make someone say, hey, I like Alvin's work. I want to come by. I want to get another ticket to the next show. You know, so you have to have mentality. What am I doing tonight? What's my job? Because remember, we're all there. We're working, right? We're getting paid, right? Hope most of us are working for money. We're getting paid. So we're getting paid to do a job. So what is my job tonight? My job is to put Mike X over in 10 minutes, you know, with this finish. Here we go. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever the case may be. But you have to look at it that way and how you can contribute to the company and give back to the company. And that's how you get bookings, because you say, okay, and that's how you would build a resume. You know, I've built my resume pretty good, I would say. You know what I'm saying? By my work rate, what I do, what I can bring to a company, the companies I've worked for, the talent I've worked with, guys like Dan Moff, guys that are on TV, guys like Max Caster, Anthony Bowens, work guys like MJF, been on cards with him, been on, I pretty much watched him from early days at Creator Pro. You know what I'm saying? So I watched how he developed his heel character. He's been MJF since he's been MJF. That's him. That's really him. A lot of people always ask me, how was he really? That's him. He walk in NYWC, with the scarf, and that's him. You know, that was him from day one. But he, as long as a long list of other guys, they bring something, and I learn from them. So even though I would work a Dan Moff, or I'd go work a student the next show, I'm going to learn from Dan Moff, and whatever I learn from Dan Moff, I should pass on to that student. So I know I went on one big rant here, but hopefully whoever's listening can get something out of that.
And that's what we're here for. We wanted to have the listeners get this, so that it's not only transitioning from your aspect, but from what they're doing in their lives here when they listen to the podcast. Because I always said that the show transcends not only wrestling, but it also goes into what everyday life is, which is the question I'm going to ask you is about. You have degrees and such, mm-hmm. and with that, where's your thoughts about how from here on out you're going to sit there and use those tools from you know, the thoughts of what I went to school for, as opposed to what I'm getting to wrestling. What is going to be your thoughts from here on out on how you're going to expand on out for career wise or even belief wise?
That's awesome that you brought that question up, because wrestling isn't my story, right? Wrestling's a part of my story. My story is really helping adults with disabilities. You know, once I started working with a company called Adults with Children, Children and Learning Disabilities, ACLD, I got a taste of working with adults with disabilities. And that's something that my dad used to do. Mm-hmm. So something that's a little hereditary, I guess you could say,
right,
in our genes, but just helping people. And I kind of got hooked on that. And then I wound up getting my master's in that and working in human services leadership. And then I wound up being now a director for a large agency in Queens currently. So, and one of my goals with that was to open up kind of agencies across the country that really don't have the same supports that New York does. You know, New York has a lot of supports for adults with disabilities, where a lot of across the country doesn't. So that's kind of where that I want that to lead. So if wrestling could lead me to a broader landscape where I could touch more people and make awareness about adults with disabilities more, I think that's my goal. I don't think my goal was never to be The Rock or Stone Cold and be on top of the business. Of course, that's awesome and that's a passion of mine, but I want to touch more people, and maybe I could bring out that message. So maybe I can almost maybe have my cake and eat it too. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I can be a wrestling superstar, but also put over the message. And now it's not even autism awareness, it's autism acceptance. You know what I'm saying? We're right, accepting adults with disabilities and stuff like that. And the world is changing. You know what I'm saying? You have to be living under a rock to notice the world is changing. You know, so you have to get on board with the change. So I want to assist with the change to the world. And if wrestling can be a way to get there, then that's perfect. Because now I can have my dessert, you know what I'm saying? And have my cake and eat it too, I guess. You know?
Does your shoot constituents know about your wrestling career?
They do. My old job at ACLD, they did. And they actually came out to a show. A lot of my guys that I work for, we actually had a show at this agency called Free. And we did a show there, and a lot of my group guys came and watched me there. So, yes, my old job there. But my new job, since I was a director coming in, I waited like about 2 or 3 years to tell them. But then I kind of dropped it. You know, I'm a professional wrestler. Like, yeah. Oh, you know, but they love it. You know what I'm saying? They love it because a lot of the people we support like it. So a lot of adults with disabilities, they love it. You know, so a lot of times if you want to win a work today, one of the guys with disabilities came up to me and he's like, "Hey, man, did you catch Full Gear?" I'm like, "No, I'll talk to you about it." And he's a huge MJF fan. Right. So when I pick up photos of him, me and MJF from like 2015. He's like, "Oh, you knew him back then." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, good friend of mine, you know, this, that, and the third." And it's kind of cool, you know? So they love it too. And it's awesome. So yeah, now my job is starting to catch wind.
Yeah. It's funny that we could tie the worlds that we have, to wrestling as we do, because there's a lot of people who, it goes to that certain, cult aspect to where it's like, you know, wrestling's fake and whatever case may be. And then we have us who will look at a Bullet Club shirt or look at AEW or Bray Wyatt shirt. We look at each other and we give each other that nod, like, "Yeah, fam, we get it." Because in my place of business, I do the same thing. I'm not too far from what you do. And, I deal with the same kind of constituents, but I always said that wrestling is a underlining genre that many people don't like to say they enjoy, but they enjoy it. They know that they do.
Yeah.
And what has been your biggest plus that's been happening for your career in the past year or so that's been able for you to say that I could proudly say that I'm a wrestler?
You know what? Wrestling, like I said earlier in the podcast, wrestling has a lot of clicks to it, and it clicks for you. My first kind of click was like 2014, 2015, when I started doing the Absolute Gimmick and I started really working heel. And I felt like I was getting booked a lot, and I actually got booked down in Florida for a Full Impact Pro, which at then the promoter was Trevin Adams, and he was also promoting Evolve. And at that point, WWE was having Evolve as their kind of as what they were looking at to bring up talent. That's how Nice was hired from Evolve. So I got a chance to work for FIP. This was 2016, summer of 2016. And at that point, I felt like I was on top of the world. I felt like wrestling was there. Everything clicked. And then the pandemic came around, and I came out of the pandemic with a different focus. I was a little older, and I started to slow down in the ring.
Mm.
Not bad, but slow down in a good way, where it clicked for me that the fans need to watch the show, the wrestling matches, the show, in regular speed. And the way I was giving it to them prior to the pandemic was in slightly in fast forward, where you're just moving too fast. You know, move, 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 oh, move. And the crowd's like, you know, they're like you would watch a movie in fast forward.
Right.
You can't understand a movie in fast forward. So right. Now I'm understanding, like, okay, one scene. Okay. Scene two.
Exactly, yeah.
The climax. Three, you know, so everything makes sense. So they know what I'm doing. So even the person that doesn't even like wrestling, I'm bringing my niece's daughter's daughter. She's sleeping over. Here she is watching the show, and she can understand what I'm doing.
Right.
She'll understand. I don't like that guy. I want that guy to win. Why is he bullying that guy? They'll understand somewhat of the story.
Yeah.
Because I dumbing it down.
Yeah.
But a lot of new wrestlers don't understand that, and they're moving too fast
because they want because what they want is their highlights on their Instagrams, on the social medias to show them off. And I think you and a lot of wrestlers that's coming up who are especially from the school you've come from are grateful of knowing what storytelling is in wrestling. It's the bookers and the promoters who are at fault to allow these wrestlers to do that at the end of the day. And I say that constantly. it's fun to get your views, your likes and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we're seeing that as wrestling fans, we pull back because regardless of our age, we sit back and we go, yeah, we like the story more than anything else. And we're seeing that. But before I let you go, bro, I have to say that I want to thank you for your time and for checking in with us in Turnbuckle Tabloid. But also, I need to know something before we go. Heterosexual or not? No, I'm kidding.
No, interesting.
No, Alvarez. What Alvarez's name comes from? Where's that from?
Alvarez. You know what's funny? I'll tell you where the name comes from. So I always wanted something.
Ethnic?
No, you know what? I wanted something with AA. I wanted the AA because I'm a big Arn Anderson fan.
Okay.
So a lot of people knew me as a fan for NYWC, so they knew my name was Alvin. So I couldn't change my name to Bob Stride. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to be Alvin something.
Right.
So I liked AA. So Papa, I was actually with Papa Don at training, and he's like, he's throwing names around. He's like, what's your mom's maiden name? And I go, Cirillo, mom's Italian. So I go, Cirillo. And she goes, he's like, what about Cirillo Alvarez? And I'm like, I'll drop the Cirillo part, but Alvarez I'll take. So Alvarez, that's how it kind of came about.
So you're not Spanish at all?
Not Spanish at all. I'm actually half Sicilian, half black.
You're still Spanish with the Sicilian thing. We're still,
top 500 Hispanic wrestlers.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We'll accept you. We'll take you in.
You know what's funny is I got a chance to wrestle Haku early in my career.
Right.
And at the time, I had my really long hair. And he got there a little late where I was ready, had my hair wet. And he came downstairs in the locker room and he goes, look like a younger me. And I go, listen, if I ever want to do a Samoan gimmick, do I have, you know, and he's like, listen, if you want to do a Samoan gimmick, you have my blessing. And I was like, that's pretty cool. So if I ever do want to do a Samoan gimmick, I have the blessing from the toughest one
out. And since dad plays an instrument, what do you play?
You know what? I played clarinet when I was in elementary school. I played clarinet, and then I stopped playing the band to play football.
Oh, you must have been the disappointment to dad. You must have been.
He might. Yeah. He was okay. No, I don't think so. Because he's all right with it. He made these shirts, so he supports me.
At least play the recorder. You could at least play the recorder.
You know what? I'm a DJ now, so he respects absolute music.
Hey, get that. I had an argument with one of my friends about that, and I said the fucking the turntables is a fucking instrument. I don't care how much you want to argue with it. It's a fucking instrument.
If you get a chance, check out some of my Instagram posts. You'll see I actually learned how to beat juggle.
Oh,
so I juggle the songs and I rearrange the drum beat. Yeah, man. So music's always been. My dad's a musician, so music's always in my brain and my heart. So I lay it out instead of playing an instrument. I play the turntable as my instrument. So
okay, bitch, show off. I see you. But thank you again for your time, brother. And let everybody know where to get you. What's your social medias and where they can get you.
Yes. You can get me on Facebook, Alvin Alvarez.
No. And let everybody know what's upcoming for you as well. So.
Oh, upcoming for me. Yeah. I'll lay out my socials, everything for you. Next upcoming for me is this Saturday, NYWC, Draw the Line. It's from the NYWC Sportatorium, Deer Park. That is going to be 7 p.m. this Saturday. Then next time you'll be able to see me will be at the same place, NYWC Sportatorium, for the Suffolk Wrestling Alliance. I'll be there for the Snowball event December 8th. Then December 9th, I'm up in the air. I may pop in the trifecta, maybe, to challenge TJ Marconi.
Ooh,
or they pop up at Victory Paul Wrestling.
Friend of a show.
I don't know what I'm doing on the 9th. I don't know yet.
Yeah, TJ's a friend of a show.
And then to close out the year, you can find me at Battle Club Championship Wrestling in Philly, PA on the 16th.
Thanks again for your time, brother. And,
my man.
We got to do this again. I have much more to talk about.
Hopefully I'll be on TV at that point.
All right, brother. and you don't forget about us here.
Absolutely. Never.
Oh, all right, brother. Have a good one, bro.
Take care, brother. Thank you, my man.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff.
tabloid.